You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
The UK government has voted in favour of blocking a Scottish gender recognition bill that would make it easier for people to change their legally recognised gender from going to royal assent. The passing of this bill made Scotland the first nation in the UK to back a self-identification process for legally changing gender. But the UK government used the Section 35 order, a provision which can block Scottish laws, for the first time ever to thwart Scotland's efforts to expand transgender rights. I interviewed Scottish Greens Equalities and Human Rights Issues spokesperson, Maggie Chapman, who is the vice convener of the Equalities, Human Rights and Civil Justice Committee that took the gender recognition reform legislation through Scottish Parliament. I started our interview by asking about her reaction to the UK government's decision.
Quite frankly, I'm very, very angry. I'm outraged that the UK government has used the powers of the Scotland Act, the Section 35 powers, in this way. I think we always knew that there were elements within the UK government and in the Conservative Party, both in the UK as a whole and in Scotland, that really didn't want to see this legislation pass for a whole range of reasons, I think. But to use these powers, I think, is deeply, deeply problematic. And I think there's something very telling for me that they've chosen to use these powers for the first time on an equalities issue, on an issue about rights, on an issue that's about making life easier for an already marginalised and vulnerable group of people. And I think, you know, there are several other instances where the Scottish Parliament has passed legislation or the Scottish government has stated a position that is contrary to what happens elsewhere within the United Kingdom and has even perhaps materially affects what happens elsewhere within the United Kingdom. And the UK government have said nothing about it. So to give you an example, the Scottish government, and this is something that the Greens agree with, the Scottish government have a very, very clear anti-nuclear energy position. So we will not have new nuclear energy facilities being built in Scotland. And the UK government, despite being very pro-nuclear, has said that they will not impose nuclear reactors on Scotland. Now, energy is an issue that is reserved. It comes within the powers of the UK government, not the devolved Scottish government. And yet they didn't say anything. The issue that we're talking about today, the gender recognition reform legislation, that is an issue that is within devolved competencies of the Scottish Parliament. So I think it's deeply, deeply concerning, not only that the UK government has taken the step at all, but that they've chosen to do it on an issue of equalities and human rights. I think that speaks volumes about the direction of travel for the UK government and the kind of society they want to see.
This decision using a Section 35 order on an equality issue, what precedent do you think this sets for transgender rights in the UK?
Well, I think it's very concerning. It sets, I think, a very dangerous precedent for the UK government to ride roughshod over devolved powers like this in this way on a rights issue, I think is really, really concerning. We've already seen some of the moves that the UK government are making around the rolling back of other rights. They want to remove the human rights cover that we have by virtue of having been a member of the European Union and the European Convention of Human Rights. They want to remove all of those and introduce what they call a Bill of Rights. But it's quite clear that in that UK government proposal, it's actually a rights removal bill. It's not enhancing or protecting the rights that we currently enjoy. So I think, you know, on one level, we know that the UK government is not committed to international human rights good practice. It's not committed to striving for better human rights. We see that with their treatment of the gender recognition legislation in Scotland and of trans rights in general across these islands. But I think it also says something quite or potentially quite damaging for other minority rights and other equalities issues. If it's so easy in some ways for them to say that this small step that would make the lives of a very small number of people a little bit better, but significantly better, if even that small step they won't let Scotland be out of step with the rest of the UK on, what other policies, what other pieces of legislation will they be prepared to use a Section 35 order on? You know, we don't know the answer to that question yet, but I think it sends a very worrying signal for progressive and rights-based policies that we want to pass in Scotland, but I think rightly now fear being challenged by the UK government.
The UK government has claimed that Scotland's gender recognition bill would conflict with equality laws which apply across Great Britain. What do you make of these claims?
So the different bits of legislation that we're talking about here, the UK government in 2010 passed the Equality Act, and that covers the whole of the United Kingdom, and it remains part of the legislation that all of the devolved nations adhere to. There are claims that the gender recognition reform legislation will have an impact, will impact on that Equality Act and will interfere with its action. Now, I think there are a couple of points on this. Firstly, the gender recognition reform legislation is about making a process that already exists easier. So it's about making the process for legal gender recognition in Scotland easier through a process of self-declaration. So trans people, rather than having to provide medical evidence, rather than having to provide confirmation of a diagnosis of gender dysphoria, rather than having to provide evidence of having lived in their acquired gender for significant periods of time, it's currently 2 years, that process is what the legislation we passed in the Scottish Parliament last December, that's the process that this makes easier. It's about taking out that medical diagnosis requirement, taking out the requirement for a medical panel to make a determination, and reducing the time for which somebody has to live in their acquired gender. So gender recognition certificates, however, have been in existence since 2004. So people have been able to get legal gender recognition since 2004. And that was, as I said, 6 years before the Equality Act came into being. So if there was conflict with the legislation that we passed in Scotland last December and the Equality Act, which is UK legislation, that conflict would have existed since 2010, because gender recognition legislation existed since 2004. So I know that that's potentially quite a complex argument, but trans people across the UK have been able to get gender recognition certificates since 2004. The Equality Act comes in 2010, and the two work together without any issue. There was seen as no conflict, no issue in 2010. So why there is any conflict now, where it's simply about the process of obtaining a gender recognition certificate, I fail to see how there's any substantive change there. The other thing that I think people are unhappy about, those who are against this legislation are unhappy about, in some ways, it is made even less clear, is on the we put into the gender recognition reform legislation that nothing in that bill would affect the Equality Act. We know we can't. We're the Scottish Parliament. We're a devolved parliament. We cannot affect UK-wide legislation. So for me, there's not only an inconsistency in the argument, an inconsistency of logic, there's also a very, very clear inconsistency of practice, because gender recognition certificates have been a thing since long before the Equality Act even came into existence.
So what will your next steps be, particularly as the Green Party or as a parliament in general, for appealing this decision?
There are a couple of avenues that are currently being explored. The Scottish Greens have said very clearly that we will resist the Section 35 order. I think we are, because we have an agreement with the Scottish Government, the Bute House Agreement, that we actually modelled on some of the work of New Zealand Greens and their agreement with your government. Within the Bute House Agreement, we have a very, very clear commitment to the gender recognition reform legislation. And so it's likely that if the Scottish Government chose to challenge the UK government's Section 35 order in court, that would be fully supported by the Scottish Greens. I think we would like to see that happen. But I think there's also a question in all of this for the Scottish Parliament as a whole. In December, when we voted on the gender recognition legislation, it was backed by over two-thirds of our MSPs. It was backed by members of each of the five parties we have in the Scottish Parliament. So it was overwhelmingly supported by and had cross-party support. And I think, given that the UK government is seeking to challenge that, there's a question for the Parliament as a whole. You know, what does that say about the UK government's respecting of devolution, respecting of the Scottish Parliament to make its own laws in devolved areas? What does that say about the UK government's process of acknowledging Scottish democracy in action? And I think there are questions being asked within the Scottish Parliament itself as well around what are the kinds of challenges that we would want to take as a corporate body. We're still in the very early stages of those discussions, but I am pretty much certain that we will end up, this will end up in court one way or another. Really, we see the UK government's approach here. It's an attack on devolution. So they are undermining the powers that the Scottish Parliament has by right of the Scotland Act or of the devolved settlement. They are undermining the democratic processes of the Scottish Parliament. And I think that's a pretty serious constitutional position for the UK government to be in. But I think for me, actually, the really, really important thing to remember in all of this is what we are talking about: trans people's lives here, and their voice, trans people's voices, trans people's lives are not heard, are not often recognised in the midst of all of this. The debate that we've had in Parliament, the long time coming of that legislation, it's been in discussion for over 6 years. During that time, it's been trans people that have been on the brunt of a misinformation campaign. I think quite a cynical stoking of a culture war around trans issues, but wider equalities issues too. And at the heart of this are trans people who just want to live as who they are and be recognised in law as who they are. It's something I take for granted. It's something that most people just take for granted. And I'm very keen to ensure that we don't lose sight of their lives, those voices in all of this, because what the legislation we passed in Scotland last December sought to do was make life easier for those marginalised and already vulnerable trans people who have borne the brunt of disinformation and a cynical culture war. So that's I think where we need to retain our focus. I think what the UK government is doing is deeply damaging for trans people in Scotland, but I think it sends a very negative message around the UK's approach to trans people globally and to equalities issues globally.
I also spoke to research associate at the University of Auckland's Public Policy Institute, Dr. Sarah Bickerton, about harmful rhetoric surrounding transgender and other minority rights in the UK and the potential implications of blocking this legislation on Scottish democracy. I started off by asking Bickerton about her perspective on what is happening in the UK.
As of this morning, New Zealand time, the Westminster has voted in favour of the government, through Secretary of State Alistair Jack, voted in favour of enacting Section 35 to block Scotland's Gender Reform Bill from going to royal assent. But it was the last symbolic step before it becomes law. Now, the basis of what Westminster has done this is that they've argued that there is the Equality Bill, that is the Equality Act that's in place for all of the UK, and it sets up a bunch of issues around gender equality, et cetera, et cetera. And they're in place across the entire UK, including Scotland. And what Westminster are arguing is that the Gender Recognition Reform Bill contradicts the Equality Act and would create inconsistencies where they're concerned about the ramifications of that. Now, when the Scottish Parliament passed, and overwhelmingly by a super majority, 86-39, the Gender Recognition Reform Bill, there's actually a section in it that says that this bill does not conflict with the Equality Act. But the UK Parliament has decided that the concerns of Secretary of State Alistair Jack are sufficient to warrant this unprecedented constitutional move of enacting Section 35. And there's going to be some really interesting ramifications from that as a result.
And as well as claiming that it conflicts with existing equality laws in the UK, UK ministers have also, what it appears to be, have been influenced by harmful rhetoric about trans people. For example, that allowing trans people to more easily change their legally recognised gender, that this would threaten women's safety. What do you think about these kind of claims and how they influence laws like this?
Well, as a social scientist, I've got two ways in which I can look at that kind of concern. One of them is to look at the evidence, and the other one is to look at it from a theoretical perspective. The evidence from other countries that have so-called self-ID laws, where they've reduced the restrictions on trans people being able to more easily change their ID documentation, like Ireland, Denmark, Argentina is particularly the one that's been around for a long time, and recently, of course, New Zealand. The evidence shows that those concerns aren't justified. We're not seeing waves of women's rights being eroded because, for the most part, cis women and trans women pretty much occupy similar social categories. So they operate similarly, and so there is no eroding of the category of women or women's spaces because of this. So that's the evidence doesn't actually show that. And then from a theoretical perspective, doing a gender analysis, it doesn't really stack up. We interact with each other in everyday life on the basis of gender. The actual situation, whether or not someone is cis or trans, doesn't really play a part in terms of how we occupy ourselves as women or men or non-binary persons. That's the primary category. And then trans women have things that are particular to themselves, and cis women have things that are particular to themselves, but they both occupy a space as women. And as we've discovered, that including other women in the category of women, understanding the needs of white women versus non-white women, indigenous women versus immigrant women, disabled women versus non-disabled women, you expand and understand you've got a multiplicity of women occupying these this gender category, and that's how we interact with each other. We don't interact with each other based upon going up and checking what genitals, what chromosomes, what hormone arrangements, et cetera, what skeletal structures we have with each other. Something that we do on the basis of gender. We don't do it on the basis of sex. Now, have they've raised some concerns around issues regarding sports, issues regarding prisons, et cetera, or women's spaces. The data shows that women in sport, trans, if there were a sporting advantage that we were seeing for trans women, we would see them dominating women's sport, and we just don't see that. So these concerns, while for some people may be validly held, when we look at the data, it just doesn't support it. Now, why this is occurring particularly in the UK is that anyone that's been paying a particular attention to this notices that over the last while, last couple of decades or so, the UK has got, and particularly in the last decade, UK has gotten institutionally more transphobic in a way that's unprecedented across the rest of the world. We are seeing in the last 5 years or so an increase in the US and of transphobia as a product of trans visibility, growing acceptance and inclusion of trans people, but also losses against conservative pushes against gay rights. And so there's been a shift from opposing gay rights to using transphobic narratives to not just attack trans people, but also reuse and reinvoke traditional anti-gay homophobic narratives. And you'll discuss that. You'll notice that if you look at any of the arguments used against trans people, it's just recycled homophobia applied to trans people, and it shouldn't be a shocker. If you're doing that kind of political analysis, you can see the same kind of arguments being made. But that's the US, and we're seeing those rises of violence and hatred, et cetera, in the US. But the UK has a particular context of it being highly institutionalized in politics, in law, et cetera, in institutions, in a way that's quite different from the rest of the world. And it's not a shocker that we would see the UK Parliament, particularly through a Conservative government, block this legislation, that this legislation would be the thing that would trigger Section 35 use, because of that historical institutionalized transphobia.
And the passing of this bill would make Scotland the first nation in the UK to back the self-identification process for legally changing gender. Could you go over for our listeners a bit about what a self-identification process would mean for trans people?
Yeah, so self-ID is a rather broad category. It's not really a legal term, but more it's like a descriptor for a series of passages that allow trans people to have an easier process to garner identification documents in for their new or like their wished for gender identification. And in New Zealand, we saw this last year in passage of the amendments to changing our birth certificates in New Zealand. And previously, self-ID had been established for a long time in regards to passports. And the legislation that went through in New Zealand meant that trans people didn't have to go through the a literal court process, to get their birth certificate change involved. It generally involved getting a lawyer involved. It had to massive amounts of documentation. It took a while. If anybody that's gone through the court process knows that they're not the fastest. So this was considerably cost, time, and impact on life. For trans people to be able to do this kind of really basic thing, to have their identification documents aligning and able to be used for their everyday life. And so the legislation that falls under the self-ID descriptor in New Zealand involves simply aligning birth certificate processes with passport, et cetera, et cetera, where trans people aren't required to now go before a court judge to they can do it through self-affirmation, and the medical requirements on them to be gatekept by medical professionals in order to live as their preferred gender were made easier for them to do so. They still have to go through a number of steps, of course, to do the self-identification. It's not simply a matter of rocking it up and saying, hey, I am so-and-so. There's still some work to do. But it's faster, it's easier, it's cheaper, which means that particularly for trans people, those that are in vulnerable communities alongside their trans identity, there is less of a barrier for them to be able to access the identification documents as their authentic self. And that's pretty much how self-ID has been working around the other countries that have been adopting this, is removing the medicalization requirements, removing the legal hurdles, and just making it consistent with existing legislation as it was in New Zealand, and relying on them as citizens to affirm that this is something that they wish to do. Giving power to these kind of minorities to be able to identify themselves rather than gatekeeping their ability to fully participate in society.
Is there anything else that you think is important for people to consider in regards to this topic?
I think the major thing is it's for the majority of us, this isn't going to impact us. This kind of legislation does not impact us. The data doesn't show that it's going to impact us. It's going to allow one of the most vulnerable communities in our society to be able to fully participate. And to a certain extent, it shouldn't affect us. It's administrative legislation that allows us to go, okay, this community gets included. And I think that's the really important thing to focus on.
The Conservative Party has declining support. Are you hopeful that conditions may improve for trans people in the UK?
Oh, to be honest, at the moment, I would say probably not in the short term. In the longer term, yes, I think this kind of stuff will eventually happen. These kind of restrictions, this kind of institutionalized transphobia will decrease and things will be better for trans people in the UK. In the immediate term, regarding the Scottish Gender Recognition Reform Bill, where the Nicola Sturgeon, the Scottish First Minister, has said that she will go towards a legal challenge to this through judicial review, that the basis for the Section 35 enactment will be challenged. But this is unprecedented. We don't know if that would be successful. the interesting thing is then what's this going to happen, the ramifications of the enactment of Section 35, what ramifications for Scottish independence? So in the, when we ask what's going to be the situation for trans people in the UK, we're almost going to be asking now what's the ramifications in general for the UK as an, as a, as we know it today, because it, we may be looking at far more higher degrees of independence pushes occurring within the UK, particularly via Scotland initially. And so Scotland may be a differing context from the UK going forward from, as a result of this.
That was the Scottish Green Party's Equalities and Human Rights Issues spokesperson, Maggie Chapman, followed by Dr. Sarah Bickerton from the University of Auckland on the UK government blocking a Scottish gender recognition bill.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.